This is to show as part of the transition. Some of you went down to the Chicago Art Institute. There was a statue down there with four lovers crawling out of marble. And some of you were here when he gave his never-to-be-forgotten talk about Michelangelo. And so this poem to inaugurate my lay ministry is called Coming Out of the Marble for Joe Hoffman. And he's ruined my meter because it says 11 feet tall for David in here, and he says it's 18 feet tall. So I'm going to have to change it on the spot. When he wanted to carve a statue, Michelangelo would take his chisel to a raw chunk of marble and probe for someone he felt was inside it. After a month, he might have liberated maybe a knee or maybe an elbow. Sometimes half of a muscle-bound person was left holding up most of the marble, or practically pulled over backwards by the weight of uncut rock in which his shoulders were embedded. There's a little part in here for Warren Hayes. David, you might say, is at least one exception, 18 feet tall and every succulent masculine inch of them out of the marble. There are a few who make it in each generation. But have you looked at his eyes and his temple? With that kind of look on the face of our heroes, it's a marvel anyone comes out of the marble. I used to spend hours at 15 or 16 marveling at A Hand of God by Rodin, a huge open palm emerging from marble and holding a second raw chunk, all uncarbon except for one smoothly polished corner containing a coupling man and woman. But then I was also, at 21, fascinated by his Terry-tip women. Is that the way you pronounce it? Terry-tip women, all hunched up, bearing on their muscle-bound backs whole courts of law, popes, tombs, and cathedrals. There is nothing the least baroque or aspiring about Rodin's Terry-tips after Michelangelo, nor about four lovers I saw last weekend by Lorenzo Taft, some outcast American scene, circling around an uncut chunk, gracefully and ineffectively reaching, each trying to touch and comfort the other in a faceless dance around raw marble in which their chests and their loins were embedded, a pathetic separation of polished buttocks. As if this were not enough of a comment on life in America in 1920, their heads were stuck fast in an uncut overhang, which is all that can be seen of the statue if you look down above from the stairway, looming above them, pressing down on their temples. Life in the 70s isn't much better for women, for lovers, for those who see Goliath coming, but recently, after a tremendous struggle, I have gotten one eyebrow, part of one left foot, and one entire knee joint out of the marble. We're going to have the chicken pluckers lead you in number 20.
We'll talk a minute about this song and songs in general, and I think it's entirely appropriate for what Edison just said. Some songs, like Simple Gifts, for example, go along rhythmically so straightforward that a group can sing them and just have a big time. Follow the bouncing ball and verse. Other songs, like Kumbaya, doesn't make any difference how the rhythm goes, because what you're seeing is harmony all through there anyway. You get to the Kumbaya and you sing four parts or nine parts or whatever, you know, kind of the life. Well, this one tries to combine both of these things, and when we get on into the second and third verses you have listed there, we're liable to get badly out of meter and all of us out of joint. But just remember that Pete Seeger wrote this, and he can do miracles with it, and he makes it work. And if we don't, that's just because we don't. You might try a couple times to get it right. But the neat part of this song is in the chorus. To everything, turn, turn, turn. When you get the turn, turn, find a note and sing it. Because that's going to make a whole difference. It's a lot of fun. And it goes sort of like...
Everything turns. and the time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace.
It's kind of appropriate that Henry's reading the King James Bible, which is in two pieces. It's falling apart. The lobster cat life is like, I think that somehow expresses the rending of our traditional religion, which in our family was Episcopalianism, and the putting together again of something new, which is the peculiar form of Unitarianism known as prairie. And I hope that we will be able to think a little bit about some prayer moments during our ministry, which in some way may sew together for everybody here out of themselves what has been perhaps rent as we crawl to prayer Unitarianism from our various religions like new chickens out of old eggs. You heard the theme in both the song, I think, which is based on Ecclesiastes, and in the Ecclesiastes itself, rhythm. Everything turns, turns, turns. Talking in the Ecclesiastes about a time in your own life, a rhythm in your own life, a time for embracing and a time for refraining from embracing, a time to love and a time to weep. And we all know those alternative periods, the changing cycles in the seasons of our own lives, which may not necessarily follow the seasons themselves. They follow our own inner rhythms as we grow organically like trees, sometimes surprising ourselves the way our branches fall off, hopefully to grow again, hopefully not to go down with disease, at which point it will be a time for more trees dying. The rhythm comes more fundamentally than I think we realize into human life. I think we think of poetry, for example. I think whenever I hear any place as a poet, somebody says super civilized, super sophisticated, super aesthetic, oh dear, culture, capital dreadful C. I don't think we realize that poetry is another one of those things which is completely organic to life. Actually, I think it was Northrop Frye who said that in the cultures which are closest to the level of sustenance, such as the Eskimo culture, you have the most of that culture devoted to poetry. Poetry is actually far, far more primitive than prose. It comes from the word verso, to repeat itself. Prose comes from the word pro, to walk on, and poetry came first, which is why, in case you're wondering, I'm wearing this. So you say, okay, well, what can poetry and rhythms and things like that do for me? And the rhythm part I don't have to worry about when I talk about music or prairie, because everybody here pretty much grooves to music. But what can poetry do for me? That's just some sophisticated thing she's doing because she's a poetry teacher and that's how she feeds herself. What is the very first thing you see? The very first experience you ever had? The very first apprehension of your senses, before you were born, when you were covered over in your mother's womb, as the Bible says, it sounded like this. Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump. You're inside, you got, it's like when you stick your head underwater in the bathtub and somebody's pounding on the outside, the first thing you heard, right, is what? The thump, the thump, the thump. And when life gets to be stressful and difficult on the outside, on what you're doing in life, you return to those rhythms. And that's why poetry, which is rhythmic speaking, and music, which is rhythmic singing and chanting and dancing, and all the other rhythmic things are soothing and healing, is because that's the thing you heard in the first place, and it came far before you heard any crows. And those of you with children, maybe like my younger daughter, I think before she spoke, crows used to chant. And her favorite thing to do is to stick her head in the toilet and chant there. it made a nice rhyme. I don't know whether any of you have been doing a lot of crying recently, but if you have, you probably noticed there, while you're trying to keep yourself from jumping out the window, that you also cry in rhythm. Babies cry in rhythm and people cry in rhythm. All these things take you away from stress and back to yourself. And here's where the scientists are going to have to not bother me with accuracy. But it seems to me that there's no wonder about this, because aren't we made up of a whole bunch of different cells, and each little cell is going kerplunk, kerplunk, kerplunk. So that the structures, as the waves of life hit them, can shape those waves into rhythms. So that we're kind of, each of us, a complete universe of dancing cells, and all the little things that are dancing in them, whatever they are. Everything in us is dancing, so no wonder when we return to anything that has to do with rhythms, we feel better. No wonder. Because we're back to the source, to the core of our being, rather than involved in prose activities, which are completely abstract, very, very abstract and aesthetic, and sophisticated compared to poetry. Speaking of which, Pat Watkins, you got it?
The Lake Isle Innisfree. The Lake Isle Innisfree by Yeats. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin built there, of clay and bottles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the crickets sing. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon purple glow, an evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always, night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core.
It's the poet standing in London. And that, I think, is why so many people like to go to lakes unfrozen in the summertime. because they hear the rhythm. And the rhythm that Yeats is hearing in the deep heart's core on the London pavement, thinking of the Lake Isle of Innisfree, which is a little island in the middle of the lake near Sligo, he hears the rhythm of the lake in his deep heart's core because it's the same rhythm. There's another human here that has the same feeling, that the heart in there, the four-chambered heart, I think it is actually itself the world, and the world is the heart. And how do you know that we're not some, how do the cells in our body know any more about us than we know about the rhythm of the universe? This one is, the world stands out on either side, no wider than the heart is wide. Above the world is stretched the sky, no higher than the soul is high. The heart can push the sea and land further away on either hand. The soul can split the sky in two and let the face of the goddess shine through. She is somebody who should be looked into. I'm a little bit afraid of her because twice in the last year she has done something for me. Once I was frustrated because I couldn't find any Rurels, so I made up a chant. Oh, goddess, goddess, great are you, prodigal are you in your prodigality. And I turned around, and there were these mushrooms, these morels like this. And this is true. I picked them up in my knapsack, and then got lost in the swamp in Washington Island. The other thing I did is I went in the English department the other day before they were to have a hearing on one of my best friends to see if they were going to fire her or not. And I did a circle three times and prayed to the spirit of the goddess and the felon wife. And my friend got a 3-year contract. So it's not always positive going with the rhythms. And, you know, like you mentioned the goddess, you begin to think about maybe Satanism and things like that. There's sometimes a difficult part of it, like a time to live and a time to die, a time to love and a time to hate, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. That is, once you get into the rhythm of life, it's dangerous as hell, because you're in the rhythm of life, and death is in the rhythm of life. And Terry has a poem about that by Faust, which he, I asked him to read in German.
I don't read German. I don't read English.
No,
okay.
I didn't ask him to read German.
This is from Faust.
Life's pulses beat fresh and alive, and royal beneath these skies of dawn and kindly breathe. You, earth, you sky, also the royal and three-fourth resurrection at my feet. Beginning so soon to clasp me round with pleasure, stirring and summoning a strong resolve, ever described a life in the highest measure. So is it too, when pulled by yearning, pounded, thrust, and thrust for its highest goal and a chance the gates, and now they're burst from that eternal forge of superabundance of grain, we stand compelled. Iron is life. We wish to light the torch, and the sea of fire lacks strongness and measure. Is it love or hate which burn and turn about us in monstrous changing tides of human pleasure? So that we look again to earth to shroud us in that hope of youth.
In case you think I picked up this ministry alone, you're wrong. The thing I like, I always liked about Perry, is everybody was involved, and Mary Lou has been helping and going to even meetings in Chicago to find out what to do to you. And we have some wonderful things that we want to do.
There are three parts to what we're going to do now, and it's only the middle, because at 10 till 11 we have to be sitting down again like this. Is that the
time? Yeah, at which time when you sit down again after what we do with you, it'd be a good time to get coffee, because we'll sit down and have a small discussion.
The three parts to where we're at right now are that we're going to move move our chairs and coffee cups out of the way and
boom against the wall.
And then we'll be doing something about walking. And when that's over, we'll come back in a circle and sit down. You can bring chairs if you like or sit on the floor. This thing about rhythms, we breathe in and we breathe out. We sleep and we wake. We reach out towards people and we draw back from people. And many, many things are rhythmic. Walking is a rhythmic thing which all of us do. And how we do it communicates to each other how we feel. We're going to be walking now. That's all we'll be doing, but we'll be walking in different ways. And I want you to walk without talking. And listen to the sound that your feet make. Listen to your breathing. Maybe listen to your heartbeat. And feel how the different kinds of walking feel to you. And If you want, you can help to guide this operation. I will be saying stop, look, and listen at certain times. And when I say that, stop, look, listen, and I'll tell you a new way to walk. And after you, I've done that a few times, some of you may get the idea, and then you too can shout out, stop, look, listen, and give us a direction, a way of walking, or a way of feeling that will affect how we walk. So now we're into the first thing, which is to move the chairs and the coffee cups out of the way. Feels to you, these different motions, notice how much you can read on the other people by the way they're moving. Now we're all strangers, and we don't want to meet these other strangers. They're different from us, and they wouldn't like us anyway. And so we're just walking through this town, but we don't know anybody, and we don't want to meet them either.
Thank you.
coffee and bring you a chair back to sit down. Is that the minute somebody said, George Wallace is about the Democratic election. I saw four people sit Shiva. You know what that is? In the Jewish religion, I believe, if I got it right, when you're going to grieve, you're going to sit around in a circle, and a lot of us cry that way, you start rocking like this. You start grieving like this. I wonder what that does for you. Is that right, Joe?
Yeah.
Sitting Shiva? Yeah, you don't know. That kind of intimate thing you all do together, and that's where, like, when you're alone and you're in solitude, and like Yeats wants to go up to the Lake Olive Innisfree and be alone, that's one kind of restorative rhythm, one kind of relaxing rhythm that you can have solitary rituals around. But I think where these rhythms really affect us most strongly is when they lead from one person to another, and then when people put together rituals, which are simply trying to get a whole bunch of different individual life rhythms together into a social ceremony. When they put those together, that's when it gets even more exciting. And that, I think, you know, without being all the way self-conscious, there are a lot of rituals that already exist in prayer. But the trouble with rituals is that the word sounds stilted and the word sounds artificial. And a lot of us left religions where the rituals became artificial. They didn't fit us anymore. They didn't come out of our organic development of ourself. And no one knows a lot about it.
Oh, I know a lot about the reason I went to Chicago this fall was because I'd been there 2 years ago. And the reason I was there 2 years ago was to be in a workshop led by a woman named Anna Halperin, who's a dancer. And I'm not a dancer, but this was supposed to be okay for anybody because all the movements, she said, would be movements that people can naturally do. And this proved to be true. And what surprised me was, and this was the part that I wanted to share with you today, this wasn't just a workshop where people moved, but she has a whole thing going called collective creativity. And she and her husband, Lawrence Halperin, who is a community planner and architect, have worked this sort of thing out together, and they've used it in some very, very strange places. Collective creativity, they've got four initials, RSVP, which sum up the process. The R stands for resources, and the people in a group have various resources. They are their own resources in part, and there are material things, and space, and time, and there may be music. There may be all kinds of resources. The needs of the people in the group are one of the resources, and so are what they want. That's the R. And the S is the score. And now a score can be either very closed, like a formal score for a formal dance, or play in which the words and the actions are pretty fixed. Or a score can be moderately open, such as a play in which the general setting is given, but there's improvisation around the theme. Or a score can be very, very open, which a lot of people coming together and just making their plan as they go might devise a score in which there was only a very general framework, and then everyone did their own thing within that framework. We had a score now that involved me telling you to stop, look, and listen, and then do certain kinds of walking. And then two or three of you gave us a score. When Warren told us to walk like the teenage boy, that was a score for those few moments. And we followed it in our own way. And when I gave a score involving being unemployed and I said walk, Lilo sat down because she had had it with job hunting and all she could do at that point was sit. So that there was her individual creativity. She didn't have to follow that identical score, namely walk as if you've been turned down. For her, being turned down led to sitting, and that was the way she contributed to this, to the creativity part of, around that simple score of being turned on for a job. R, resources, S for score, V is value action, and that is a word that's coined by the Halperins from value and action. And their whole process is one in which evaluation is going on all the time, and people evaluate and reevaluate what they've done. At the end of something, they can look back and say, hey, this worked, this didn't work, next time let's do it such and such a way. While it's going on, they can evaluate where they're at with it and make changes. The fourth word is P for performance. So if a group comes together, plans their actions, plans a score, and analyzes their resources, plans a score for themselves, at a certain point the performance takes place. Now, ways in which this group, in this idea have been used have included such things as a school was having them, the original school had been burned out partly, it was rebuilt, and the kids had been going to school in a borrowed building for quite a long while, and it was time to move back to their newly rebuilt school. Well, they invited the Halperins in to work out a score for moving back. And so the whole school was involved in making the score. They planned the physical things that they would need and how they would move, and they had various events such as walking through the empty rooms of the old building after all the stuff was out on the street. And they had a parade with a big dinosaur leading the parade to get to the new building. And before they moved all the stuff in, they did a snake dance through the empty rooms of the new building. And then they did all the other things they planned to do. And there was music, and there was food, and the whole works. So that the moving, instead of being a disruptive thing for that group of people, was a very exciting and coming together sort of thing. And it was done through the process, this RSVP cycle, as the Halperins call it. And the word cycle, of course, tunes into what we're talking about, too. This is a process that can be used for a variety of things, and I'm not going to talk any more about it. But I wanted to go and represent Prairie, so to speak, at this thing in Chicago again, where Ann Halperin was also working again, because it seems to me that in Prairie, we do have a lot of collective creativity already. And I felt that this particular way of going about it might at some times be applicable to what Prairie does together. And I certainly thought it would fit in with Annis's ministry. One of your themes is ritual, right?
Yeah. Very nice.
Okay.
I got the idea because of the fortune reading that Andrea Lomstein and I gave last year when we asked you all to write a poem, and you just came up with this fantastic poem, and I thought, well, there's something here that maybe people would like to pull together. And then I heard a certain amount of discussion about ceremonies, and some of us here are pretty good in like the high students at pulling together things to do. Then the yoga exercise releases some of the tension.
Yeah.
In the situation of which we find ourselves here, in which space is constricted and there are many of us trying to leave it, the traffic pattern set itself up very quickly. It's very difficult to walk in. This is an ordinary reaction, and it's quite frequently the pattern you even will observe in industry or in commercial establishments. If you walk in the front door of a store, particularly the most attractive store the minute you walk by, be it maybe on the right, because it's coming to go to the right. The pattern of circular motion is very normal. I've been interested frequently in a situation like this, and we weren't trying to set up a group rhythm. But if there had been no verbal cue, everybody simply said, start walking. It would have been about probably 10 to 20 steps. The whole group would have fallen into a unified rhythmic experience. We had other things in our mind, other dramatic ideas, which could have been a little bit prevented. So it would be a very common experience in the whole group move. And if you're in crowds sometime, watch that. If a crowd trying to move in a given direction, for instance, you're leaving the stadium and have a football game, something like that, you'll find, without too much difficulty, that there'll be a trance. Of course, this is the basis of the hypnotic effect of voluntary mind. It is designed with this mind. Lull them into thinking they're going to something great.
Yeah. When you make them watching, if I immediately, began to see the bigger Gestapo, the negative and the positive, again, one of the reasons I'm afraid of the research I'm doing now into the unconscious of women as distinct from men is I'm afraid of what may come up and what people may use it for. This is true with rhythms and group motions, too.
Well, this can be joy. It also can be a threat. You just have to recognize where you fit in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Knowing it's something.
Well, when you were doing one of those things, on some of them, you look, when you're really depressed, you look right at the ground, right, almost between your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like when you were in the town and you wanted to get to know all the people, you were looking up and you were looking at everybody all the time. And it's like the way you felt and what you were doing. When you were, like when I was defying the, whatever it was, being the teenager, defying the school system or whatever you were doing. You look at the ground about 10 feet in front of you. Like you're not looking at anybody. You just, I don't want to get into you. I don't want to know you. It's hard. But what people were doing with their eyes was really into their moods, too.
It's where you up with your eyes.
There are certain rhythms that go with certain other things. If you've ever noticed, when you're chewing, your natural thing to do with your eyes is to scan the horizon. Possibly for oncoming tigers, I don't know. People, especially if they're eating alone, they always watch.
Probably keep somebody from grabbing it off your plate. We are very, very close to the animals. We are animals. Quite good. I think you think you're good.
Something like that has been running through my head, how your individual cycle, whether it's where you are in life, young, old, whether where you are with respect to love or hate or death or life or planting or reaping or any of those things, or the thing, Lois, you're talking about. And this was kind of like a gestalt exercise in the sense that we did a behavior and tried to get in touch with, and I think we all did things similarly in that kinds of ways, but the thing I'm coming up with is, how does the group, as a group, experience a cycle kind of thing, or a thing together where we ritualize or whatever, a celebration or a sadness or whatever, And how does that group kind of cycle mesh with, I mean, there are people here today who are, it's a bum day for them. There are people here where it's a good day. And yet we all tried to do the up thing and the down thing together. How does our individual, wherever we're at, fit in with the group experience?
See, that's why I think instead of having that kind of ritual and ceremony thing that you put down upon a group, why what we're interested in doing is pulling some out. That's why it's fluid, and that's why, you know, we're trying to get reactions, because eventually I think the things, well, if we came together in the simple thing of this walking around in circles, which I gather is what German people do in the intermission of their theatrical attendance. They go out and they promenade. They walk around in circles. I didn't know that, but my mother-in-law told me that. You know, that was something we fell into. We want to see what we fall into, and then that should in some way mesh with the individual cycles. I think Nellie was...
Okay, when we were in this town and we didn't want to meet anybody, everybody walked the same way.
Uh-oh.
Pretty much.
No, I felt like cutting across. I didn't want to walk with them. What?
Well, I felt like I really wanted to walk with them and not be conspicuous, you know.
Oh,
well, nobody wants to look at me,
see,
you
that's
know.
Two different ways.
And then when I wanted to make friends with people, I walked the other way, because it was easier to establish eye contact that way.
That was your way of coping with that situation, and apparently there's another way.
Rob would break away and go out and
go did you use the term collective creativity? I find that a little difficult. I would accept collective celebration, but I think true creativity somehow doesn't happen.
Well, that's luckily something we don't have to deal with this morning.
So we'll deal with it next time. I think we don't have much time.
The idea did come to mind earlier in the service, however. I just asked myself, can a committee write poetry? And there was this... verse from Ecclesiastes, which is, I think, the product of the committee set up by King James.
Well, when we read the prayer poem that you wrote last year, I think you'll see that a community can be creative and bounce off against each other. I've seen this happen in both ways, but we'll see whether it happens again. The theme of this whole ministry is happiness runs in a circular motion. If you look in the newspaper, it says everything runs in a circular motion. I think you've done a creative tick on the collective experience. And Ron's going to lead us in singing this, and maybe while we're singing, keep in mind maybe the ways you might like to develop a ceremony at it. It's around, right?
We'll just give it a quick practice before we quit. This is one of those songs that Tally's Limerick last Sunday referred to the you give me everything if you let yourself be is too many words, but that's the way Donovan wrote it. Let me sing it once, and that we've done this before, so I think it'll come easy. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat of sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You give me everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs. Think of a metronome. Happiness runs in a circular motion. The last line there, you can be everything if you let yourself be. Just that, 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 that. And you got to think that way if you're going to be able to hold it against the other side of the room when we do this around. Happiness runs happens twice between the thing, and it's happiness runs, wait a minute, happiness runs in a circular, that's the way it repeats, happiness runs in a circular motion.
Happiness runs in a circular motion, follows like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can be everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Happiness runs on a conversation. Everybody is a part of every place anyway. Everybody is a part of every place anyway.
against the rest of us. Part one. Oh, he was there.
I'm only one after you.
Oh, really? Four is the same, we're probably the same as two.
No? I think two is about our
record. Let's start it with two now, maybe if we really get collectively creative. I'll try it with three. Sign one, and then this group will start over.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Everybody lives a part of one person. Everybody lives a part of ethics and anyway. You can use the running and less of me. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs and is resting on motion. Happiness runs on a circular motion. Everybody lives a part of one person. Everybody lives a part of everything.
I just like to live over upon the oceans.
Alright, let's think of doing that, just contemplate doing that round with a circle here and a circle here, singing it and running. That's all.
Fire.